It was a really disturbing scene for everybody to have to witness. And then, and this is for this to have had to happen so that the whole nation can finally pay attention to what's going on here. Why did a kid have to get shot?
This segment was produced for KBOO News by Jason Shermans and Jacob Prescott.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a program director to manage our programming department. This full-time position requires proven experience in program directing, radio audio production, management, and supervisory skills with volunteers, with an emphasis on teamwork and a collaborative setting, and the ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. The deadline to apply for this position is Saturday, October 3rd. More information can be found at kboo.fm/employment.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers and we host every second Monday of the month where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions.
And before we get started, I want to remind everyone that you can donate today at kboo.fm/give. We aren't in the station to take your calls, but you can show your support by giving online. Support KBOO now, and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000 until September 20th, thanks to the Ronnie S. LaCroute Fund of the Oregon Community Foundation. Again, that's kboo.fm/give. Or you can also snail mail, a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Ave in Portland. Moving on to today's show.
All right, well, joining us today on the Zoom is Evan Selby. Hey, Evan.
Hello, Stephen, and hello, Rachel, brother and sister. How are you two doing today?
We are doing good, and we're happy to have you on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Full disclosure, Evan and I teach in the same school. We've known each other for a few years. Evan, would you start by telling us what and where you teach and for how long you've been teaching?
Yes, well, I teach social studies and specifically government economics, and then course called Senior Inquiry, which is a dual credit course taught in partnership with Portland State University, and I teach with one of our brothers, Jesse Vella, who does the language arts, and then one of our union sisters, Sonia Taylor, who is the professor at Portland State University. And I teach at Reynolds High School out in Troutdale, Oregon. And this is my 25th year working in the Reynolds School District.
Great, thank you for that. And just for folks who may not be familiar with Reynolds, even though the high school is situated in Troutdale, a majority of the students actually come from Gresham and East Portland, and just to be aware, it's not just a suburban school.
No, it is. You're right. It's a unique district. I mean, we serve Outer East Portland, which is where I grew up. Gresham, also the cities of Wood Village and Fairview, are also in the boundary. So yes, this Reynolds High School just happens to be way out on the east side. But you're right. We serve most students the other direction. So.
Yeah. So we always like to ask our guests who are educators what inspired them to become an educator. And also, you know, maybe what inspired you is different than what you enjoy most about it now. So if you could answer those two questions.
I would say my biggest inspiration to get into public education was definitely my grandfather. Thing I remember is when I was about 4 or 5 years old, my grandfather was principal at Gregory Heights Middle School, and he would take my brother and I there, and I just always remember, you know, he would take us into the gym, but teachers and students would always stop and talk with him, and then as I grew up, he was just always an advocate for public education, for critical thinking, creativity. So he was my inspiration really to get into public education. And then of course I had some teachers as I was in my journey in school that really also, let's say my kindergarten teacher, Ms. Jacobson, had Mr. Mijas in my sixth grade. I really was inspired by him. Mrs. Osborne, one of my high school teachers, Mr. Beeman, also one of my high school teachers. So that would be my inspiration. And what do I enjoy about it now? I've always enjoyed, when I first started my career and now, just working with youth. That's my passion. That's why I got into teaching. And then I'd also say just with my colleagues, such as you, Brother Stephen, and just the camaraderie and working together and getting to know just probably some of the most creative, intelligent, caring, empathetic people that I've ever met. And it's an honor to like work on a staff where you're surrounded by people who genuinely care about people, our students, the future of our country. So that's what I enjoy about it now.
Great, thank you. And then one more thing before we dive into some more specific questions. You are also the current president of Reynolds Education Association, or as we often call ourselves, REA. What's that like being the president? I think are you going on your third year now?
Yes, this is my third year.
Yeah.
Going into my third year as being president. It's real busy. I'll say that it's, you know, I came on as president the year where, you know, OEA and we had the statewide Red Fred movement to secure funding from the commercial business tax. So right away, jumped into that. We had a new superintendent that year. So it's been really, really busy. It's also been, you know, it's good and it's important work. So it's something that I'm dedicated to because I've always been dedicated to the union. I mean, this is my 21st year where I've been actively involved in the union. But the president, it's a whole, you know, different aspect. I've been bargaining chair, I've been grievance chair, I was organizing chair. And this is definitely another level because I'm the spokesperson, which wasn't something I always really ever saw myself doing. I never really saw myself being the president. I always was into the bargaining and the organizing, and I felt that was where my strengths are. But those have helped me in this role, so I use those on the daily. And I'm really, you know, I try to, my focus being president is to, you know, number one, you know, advocate for our members, but also continue, you know, pushing REA towards a social movement type union, where we, you know, instead of bargaining just for, you know, the bread and butter things that you typically bargain for members, but to also bargain on behalf of our community and our students, and to really engage with our community and our rank and file, and to really, you know, ramp up the organizing in our communities, because I believe that that's how we're going to really, you know, build relationships with parents and our community partners, so that we really can, you know, create the schools that we've all been talking about. So, yeah, that's how it's going so far as president up to this point. Of course, it's been even more intense since COVID has happened, and now, unfortunately, with the wildfires that are impacting a lot of our members, and just all of our communities right now with the smoke and the air quality.
Well, that's a perfect segue to the next question. Let's start here with the fire and the smoke. What are ways that you've seen these fires impacting the schools in Reynolds, the staff, students, school buildings, and how has the school district responded, and what role has the union played?
Yeah, I'll start with the staff, because I think that, you know, because we have, you know, staff members don't, most of our staff members do not live within the boundaries of the Reynolds School District. We have members that live in Estacada, live in Clackamas County. And so we put out a survey, which I'm compiling the results today and getting that out to folks so we can support members, just to get an idea of how many members are being impacted. And as you know, as of right now, we have 21 of our members who have had to evacuate. So that's, you know, that's a pretty large number. We have 54 of our members who are currently housing family members or friends. And then I've been reading through the results. There's just a myriad of issues, people with experiencing health issues because of the pollution in the air. People have actually left the metro area to get out just to avoid the smoke. Mm-hmm. People have been, you know, that have land over in the western part, west of Portland, have been housing livestock. So it's impacting, I think, the members, and it's just impacting all of us as Oregonians. You know, just recently, my wife and I were camping up in Riverside, which is our favorite camping place, and it's gone. I mean, it's burned. And just the toll on people, and just what's happening right now. And so it's definitely been impacting staff. Students as well, and our communities. I mean, we live, you know, out in a Reynolds School District. We have, you know, it's a majority Latinx population. We have 9% Black population. So just thinking about COVID and the impact that this air can have, and making people more susceptible to that. So it's impacting, you know, just people being out in the community. They can't. Everybody's, you know, pretty much staying inside. For school buildings, staff that were in buildings on Thursday, because part of the, which I know we'll talk about a little bit later, the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding we signed for distance learning, staff can go back into the buildings. But I was getting reports on Thursday where smoke was entering the buildings. So staff were leaving, and then they ended up having to shut the buildings. I know over at the high school on Friday, They did have some staff show up, just essential, but they ended up sending everybody home because smoke was getting into the building, mm-hmm. ventilation system. So it's definitely impacted the buildings. They're not safe to be in right now with the conditions with the smoke. How has the district responded? Well, as late as Thursday, the district hadn't responded. They didn't shut buildings down. The principal at one of the schools that I'd heard from ended up having to shut it down and just make the decision herself. Later in the evening, I was on a phone call with district leadership and emailing and having conversations about, you know, what are we going to do, you know, because we were set to start school on Monday. And I was talking to district leadership that we have staff that are being evacuated. We have staff that just, it's just they're not in the space right now to start school. They're right. Concerned. And so the district did come out on Friday, and they did decide to, this was early in the morning Friday, but they decided to close school Friday, Monday, And they have pushed the start of school to Thursday at this point right now, is what has how the district has responded. And the role that we played, or the union, was to communicate and really advocate in the conversations that I had to shut it down and to push back the start date, just because of what was all happening right now, that there's no really other choice but to do that, and mm-hmm. and that other school districts were already doing that, and that we should, as Reynolds, follow that lead.
And do you think that without the pressure from the union, that this would have been the same result?
Yeah, I think they would have closed. When I was talking to our HR director, he agreed. He was like, we do need to close. Like, he understood. I was also having conversations with our principal. He understood. He told me that he wanted to allow maximum flexibility for our staff, and his message to me was just, we need to take care of each other, and you need to take care of your families, and that needs to be the number one focus. So I do think that in the surrounding districts, Gresham Barlow, North Clackamas, they were already announcing that they were not going to be holding school into next week. So I think Reynolds, it would have happened. I think so.
Great.
All right. Well, kind of switching gears a little bit here. Returning to school during a COVID pandemic has been a hot topic. It was a hot topic certainly throughout the summer. Looking back at last year after Reynolds closed down our school buildings, what do you see as being the successes and failures? What stands out to you?
Yeah, I thought about this question. It's really hard to identify successes. And I don't mean that necessarily to downplay the district, although we did have issues, as you know, Brother Stephen, leading up to the closure, with the district providing really what I would consider misinformation about having hand sanitizer in the schools. Then we found out that they were alcohol-free, saying that there was plenty of equipment to wipe down surfaces. We heard from teachers that that was not true, that rooms were not being cleaned adequately. I don't put that onto our custodial staff, but more of a lack of enough custodial staff because of a disinvestment by the district over the years. So there were failures leading up to that. And it really, I think, because REA initiated a petition in the community on that Friday, March 13th. If you remember, the district was going to keep the school open into next week for 2 days. And we pushed the district to actually announce closing on the 13th. And then it's hard for successes. It was so, I think we can all say it was extremely difficult to immediately switch from the term brick and mortar type of school all immediately to an online environment, when we knew that a lot of our students didn't have the resources, whether it be laptop or access to Wi-Fi. It was hard to identify, like, I guess, successes. I mean, I would say it was successful in that teachers did everything they possibly could to connect and engage with students, despite what I would say was a very difficult time, and the district really had struggles with the technology, with logging in students. It was very clunky, and so it made it difficult, but the teachers working together, trying to deliver the services to the students. I think failures, communication, I think during that time, from the district to the teachers was not good. A lot of teachers were wanting more from the district, more leadership, more guidance. And we really didn't get that from the district. And that made it extremely difficult for folks who were already in a very stressful situation. I mean, I'll use an example. When we were bargaining with the district over an MOU around distance learning, since we knew we were gonna have to most likely finish the year out. I mean, at the beginning, the governor was saying, you know, at least through the end of April, but I knew, and I think the leadership of REA knew, that we were just at the beginning of this pandemic, and that we most likely would be in school all the way through the end. And so when we were bargaining the the MOU for distance learning in April, we had come to the table with the district and we had talked about, you know, this is a unique, it's a difficult, stressful situation, and we need to have understanding and empathy, not only for our students and their families, but for our members, especially our members who have children and have families and are trying to juggle all that at home. And so when we first entered into conversations with the district, we thought we had an agreement on a time frame of like about 5 to 5.5 hours where teachers would be online. And what a lot of people in the public don't understand is just because you're offline doesn't mean you're not working. You're grading, you're maybe making phone calls. And we thought we had agreement with the district on that. And they came back and they wanted just a regular straight like 8-hour workday, 8 to 4. And I would say that that was a failure on the district's part to not understand, in my opinion, nor have the empathy to realize that it was extremely stressful for teachers. So that I would say was, you know, the failure, and then just like the technology. And I know that that's difficult because it was so fast, but just the way that the technology was handled in the district and the problems with logging in, not getting hotspots maybe out in time, or at least, you know, working more on that. So yeah, I mean, I don't want to spend too much time on the fails because it was such a, I mean, it was difficult for districts all over the country to be in this. But I do think there were things that the Reynolds district leadership, for example, like the workday communication, as they were in the midst of this, like, you know, listening to teachers and listening to kids about the tech issues and then rectifying those and working on that, which I don't think happened as well as it could have.
Mm-hmm. So can you talk about the current distance learning plan for Reynolds and what are the most important components of the plan from your perspective as a teacher and a union president?
Yeah, our current distance learning plan, we negotiated another MOU around, well, now comprehensive distance learning as defined by the Oregon Department of Education. And what we really strived for in that MOU, one of our most important parts of that MOU was to give our members choice. So choice to either go into the worksite, because that was another issue we struggled with in the spring with the district, is having access to the buildings. They were basically locked them down and would not let members in to gather. We had one opportunity, but they wouldn't let people in to gather more materials as we were teaching. And so we wanted to make sure from that experience in the spring, because we heard loud and clear from our members that they wanted to be able to have access to the buildings or stay at home. We have a lot of members that still don't want to go into the buildings and be around a lot of people. So we wanted to ensure that that was in the MOU, and the district did agree to that. So members currently under this MOU have a choice to either work from home remotely, or if they prefer, they can go into the building and work from their classroom. They just have to follow the safety protocols that are in place in each building. So that was an important piece in the CDL MOU. excuse me. Another piece of the CDL MOU was about training and professional development. One of the issues we had with the district in the spring, and we actually filed a grievance on this, was PD, professional development, and for, you know, rank and file educators to have input and help actually in crafting that PD, because as we all know, most likely the best PD is when teachers get together and develop it and deliver it to each other. And not having outside consultants come in or people that, you know, whether it's be like publishers of curriculum. So we really wanted to focus on making sure that REA members had a big hand in creating the PD, and also that the PD would be focused on what we needed to be ready for CDL. What I will say is there was PD on platforms and technology, but one of the other areas we wanted to see a lot of PD on and that did not happen was social emotional learning. And we met with the district maybe 2 weeks before we were to come back to school for PD, and we noticed in their PD plan there was no social emotional learning. It was all about the platforms and the technology, some of the new programs they had bought. They did a K-10 framework for math and language arts, which those are important. But we had been stressing over the summer, when we come back to school, for the first 2 weeks when we come back with students, it should be nothing but social emotional learning. It should be about how do you build a class culture in this new online environment. It should be about how do I develop relationships with my students in an online platform. Mm-hmm. Not about let's get right down to academics and begin from day one, because for a lot of our members, they didn't hear from a lot of our students and families. So we had members that were really worried and concerned about the welfare of their students, their mental health, their physical health. And so we really pushed for that. So it was disappointing to see when we saw the master plan for the PD that there was not the social emotional learning components that we wanted. And we, myself and a building rep, had to point that out. And then we put together a session, you know, within a week, but it wasn't what it should have been. So we did focus on that, but unfortunately the district didn't have that social emotional learning piece in there. So that is something that we are going to continue to push with the district. We're also this summer, you know, with the Black Lives Matter movement and what's going on in the fight for racial justice in this country, REA started book groups over the summer. We had about 40 to 45 members who participated in book studies of Me and White Supremacy. They were very successful. So we are working with the district right now to make that part of the PD as an offering that we do moving forward. So that's another big part of our MOU that we had. And also part of the MOU too was to not start school right away, but have 2 weeks to, one, to have professional development and training, but then two, the next week to be able to connect with families and to do what we call like empathy check-ins, just to see how families are doing. And those are like, I would say like the big pieces of the MOU.
And you did get that soft start to your year?
Oh, that's yeah. That was negotiated in to the MOU, and the district agreed with us about that soft start.
All right. Well, hey, Evan, we are rapidly approaching the end of our show, and I wanted to just quickly ask you if you would tell our audience a little bit about what could possibly be our next phase, which is a comprehensive hybrid learning model where students are partly in classrooms, physically in the buildings, and then partly online. We've been began to negotiate an agreement with the district on that. Can you just really quickly, in like 30 seconds to a minute, just talk about the highlights of that?
Yeah, we are bargaining for that right now. Some of the highlights of that is what we're taking a look at is one, we want comprehensive testing. So if we are to return to the buildings, we are pushing that all REA members be able to have free testing. And we would like to see that for our community as well. Two, we want to make sure that we have HVAC systems, airflow and air circulation that is up to CDC standard and is healthy for the return to school. That is another big one. We're also in the MOU is of course meeting the metrics from the county. But we've added in those other pieces because we think it should be more than that. You know, if like professional athletes can get tested, then teachers and educators should be tested at the same rate. We also have in there, if we are to transition into a hybrid model, that there's a minimum of 2 weeks to transition into that model. We're also working on leave. So if members are having to be quarantined or do get sick from COVID, that they get extra sick time, sick days into the contract for that. So those are kind of the highlights right now, and we are negotiating that in earnest as we move forward here.
Okay. Well, are we wrapping up here? It's time to go. Unfortunately, this has been a very interesting and insightful conversation with you, Evan. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I'd like to thank Stephen, my co-host, and also Jamie Partridge, who will probably be helping us turn this into a radio-friendly file. So thank you, Jamie, and thank you. You are listening to KBOO. This is Labor Radio. Have a wonderful rest of your evening.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Hi, this is Emma with Prison Pipeline. Before we get started on tonight's show, I want to remind everyone that you can donate today at kboo.fm/give. We aren't at the station right now to take your calls, but you can show your support by giving online. Support KBOO now and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000 until September 20th, thanks to the Ronnie S. LaCroute Fund of the Oregon Community Foundation. Again, that's kboo.fm/give. You can also make a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. And now, moving on to our interview with Sarah Iannarone.
Good evening. You are listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. And we're very honored tonight to have